crackers to the hackers and the crackers. I see in binary, I speak source code. Step on my toes, I'll post a million JPEGs of you in a fag pose. In your digital stance, getting firewalled ho. Cause I'm riding the net in my 6-4. I was a dick with my 56. Now with my cable, I'm able to get that stable. On the out, my name is Ace and I'm a Leo. On the digital highway, my name is Neo and I'm a hero. In a flash, I'll school you on burning Dreamcast. You need some ISOs? Let me through my hard drive rifle. Our exchange you could never stifle. In a digital hug, you just caught the love bug. I bootlegged your CD. I caused the fight between Un and Jay-Z. The CG, it's all gonna be free. Whether we take it by force or we take it nicely. You feel that rattle in your bones? When I tell you we just hacked Dow Jones. And NASDAQ leaves you flat on your back. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. Cause I am he who loves to hack and crack. This is dedicated to the hackers and the crackers. Serial codes, source codes, ISOs, RANs.
Hello and welcome to Binary Revolution Radio, episode number 142 for April 4th, 2006. I'm Strom Carlson.
And I'm Black Ratchet. And we're not live this evening because actually we're technically as close to live as you could possibly get because it's 9:36 Eastern right now. We are taping the show. We were expecting to be live this evening. However, the DDP hack radio server does not automatically adjust the daylight saving time, so it still thinks it's 8:30. So rather than delay an hour, and because I probably wouldn't end up getting to bed around, maybe about 1:30, and that would just flat out be annoying, we're going to tape the show, and you're probably going to be updating the podcast around midnight Eastern, maybe?
Around
I don't know.
Soon.
Around soon. No, you need to get this up tonight, you know.
Yeah, I know.
Tonight.
Don't worry, it'll be up tonight. I mean,
it better be up tonight, or else yeah. I'm going to call the mighty vengeance wrath of Chilithu against you or something. I don't know.
I'm fajeering.
Yes. Vengeance, you know, lightning bolts, you know, people being eaten. It's going to be horrible unless you update the podcast tonight, Strom.
Okay, well, I will try and do that as quickly as I possibly can.
All right. I won't be held responsible for what occurs if you don't update the podcast.
Okay, well, whatever pestilence and famine may plague me, I'm sure I'm getting it right now with all this horrible rain in Los Angeles. So,
which actually, even we wouldn't have horrible rain, I guess you could say. We're having a fair share of rain in Boston, which was annoying because I had to wait out in the bus today in the middle of pouring rain. That's really the first time I've had to do that. So, it was a hint annoying.
Yeah, it rained enough last week. I mean, it's wet and gray and cold and miserable. And much as I'm learning to deal with it, I want my sunshine back, damn it.
You're just addicted to the sunshine. Sunshine's overrated. Everyone needs to be cloudy 24/7.
Well, hey, I'm addicted to sunshine, but I'm not afraid to admit it.
Yes. Actually, I was very happy with the weather in Boston today. I was riding in the Boston, and I looked over the expressway, and I saw all the buildings, but I didn't see the tops of them. And that is my personal favorite weather pattern, where it's just overcast and you can't see the tops of the buildings. And it was just like, oh, it's beautiful. However, it was raining at the time, so it wasn't as perfect as possible. I need to have it just 50 degrees and a slight drizzle. But yeah. I actually did that later this afternoon, so I'm happy.
You are totally
yes,
mad.
Yes, I know, I'm weird. I don't know why. I was in college, and I just came to the realization, I was walking down Huntington Avenue, and for those of you who've never been to Boston, Huntington Avenue, if you look down toward one end of it, you see this really tall building called the Prudential Building. It's one of the tallest buildings in Boston. It was drizzly. It was about 50 degrees. I had my nice spring jacket on. It was cool, but not too cold. And I looked at the building, and I didn't see the top. And I said, "My God, this is the best weather ever."
Well, I mean,
I figure I should move to Seattle or London or something.
Yeah, that's the place for you. I can actually see how this type of weather might be enjoyable. I mean, I can get into it. It's different, but after a while, I just get depressed. I really need that sunshine. I'm literally addicted to it. I start getting withdrawal symptoms.
Well, yeah, there's some type of mental disorder. I wouldn't call it a mental disorder, but there's some type of known thing where if you don't get enough sunshine, it's bad for you,
mm-hmm.
or it turns you into depression. They have this little light for you to use You should talk to your doctor about that.
Yeah.
Vin Rev
yeah.
Radio. The doctors are in. Ding. Mm-hmm.
Ding. So, yeah.
Let's talk about housekeeping.
Yeah. Housekeeping. Should I talk about the new setup we're using in housekeeping, or...
I guess. Yeah, well, let's get this out of the way, because I'm sure everyone's wondering why I sound like crap and you sound absolutely fantabulous.
Well, what I'm doing is I'm playing with a new way of recording at least my end, and hopefully Ratchet will start doing this too soon enough.
Never!
Yeah, you're just going to stay on your Cisco phone for the rest of eternity, aren't you?
Because it's a Cisco phone. It's just so good.
Oh, it's a great phone. I admit that. But for the radio show, personally, I'm getting sick of listening to telephone quality audio the whole time, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners are too. So I'm playing with actually using a soft phone, and it turns out that if I use a soft phone and a desk mic and a headset, I can still actually record in really high quality audio before transmitting off to the network. So now, on the podcast, you've got me and all my 22.5 kilohertz glory.
Okay. And me and that wonderful 64 kilobits per second Mula. Oh,
yeah.
It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's 22.05 kilohertz. Yeah, so.
I'm sure everyone's just sitting on their edge of their seat trying to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
There's like Teoxides, like sitting in the chat room, wherever he may be, going, oh, God, 22.05 kilobits per second, you idiots, or kilohertz per second. Oh! This is a content-free episode because they're going to take call-ins, but we're not actually going to take call-ins because we're taped.
Yeah, ha ha ha. So, oh, by the way, speaking of IRC, what's going on with that?
Let's not get into that. No, let's go. I will brave the pain. Hold on, let me take a sip of my martini first. Give me, numb the pain here.
Okay.
Mmm. Ah, that's some good stuff. So, for those of you who didn't know, if the brief history of the BinRev IRC channel, for the past, say year or so, we've been over on Dalnet. For those of you listening to the IRC show, I probably plugged it a couple of times. It's irc.dalnet/BinRev. So last month, literally, quite literally on March 1st, we said, okay, Dalnet is annoying, and we've had some issues with them, and people have been disconnecting, and people can't get in with certain, Tor. So we decided, and we also had problems with like spam bots and all kinds of annoying stuff. So we decided, okay, on March 1st, let's go move over to Freenode. Now Freenode is we looked at it. I know Pound of Anomicon's over there, and we decided, hey, they seem to be pretty cool guys. I mean, Infonomicon's over there, SE2600's over there. Let's go move over there too. So, March 1st, we decided to move everyone, and we everyone move over to Freenode, and we had some stragglers and people who stayed over and down that, but we won't get into that. So everyone moved over to Freenode, and lo, Freenode was nice. We didn't have to deal with spam bots. I don't think Hound Dog kicked a single person. Hound Dog's our resident BinRev bot. I don't think Hound Dog kicked a single person while we were over there. However, there was some certain issues halfway around mid-March with certain people. I'm not going to name names. They apologized to me, and it's okay. They were, I wouldn't say they were running exploits, but they were running certain things that they shouldn't have. And essentially, I guess you could call it they were doing an essentially a drive-by of certain IRC channels. And I mean, personally, I really can't fault them for it. It was a hoot, but just the way that, doing it to random IRC channels was just frowned upon. And so the administrator of Freenode, whose name was Lilo, said, hey, I need to talk to you. And we talked for a while. And basically he said, well, you need to talk to these people who are doing this. We don't want this to happen on Freenode. I told him I completely understood. And what we left it as is, I'm going to talk to these people, we're not going to get banned, but just make sure it doesn't happen again. So that went water under the bridge. Lilo is incredibly cool about it. Thank you, Lilo. In case you ever listen to this, which I don't think you will, until about I don't even know what it was. It was the end of March, and somebody, Hocklet, who's a complete and total asshole and very noobish. We won't get into that. Yes, that's right. I'm calling you out. Bring it on, biatch, and I'm sure I'm going to get flooded with IMs soon.
Noob asshole. I'll say it too.
You know, I don't know. I assume it was Auklet. I don't have the complete story. If it wasn't Auklet, I'm sorry. But I heard from certain people. From what I read in the logs, it was you. So let's not get into that. Some troll decided to spam. I don't even know what he spammed. He spammed something to, you know, basically all over Freenode, and basically attached our channel name to it. And so the next day, Lilo came in, and I actually wasn't there. And he talked to Stankdog, and basically, we were evicted from Freenode, which, in all honesty, I can't fault Lilo for, because his viewpoint was that while we weren't directly causing havoc, people who were attached to us were. So, I mean, I can't fault Lilo on this. You basically got to put the good of the many over the good of the few. So we were basically evicted, and we have been scattered into the four winds. So right now, I guess we don't have an official IRC channel. The only thing, we actually set, Teoxys tried to set something up over Undernet, but I think that was hacked or owned in some way, shape, or form. And someone made it invite only. They wrote a net split in or some strange nonsense. But either way, we are over on Dalnet now, back to Dalnet, because, hey, certain people can't behave, and, you know, sorry, I got to ruin it for certain people. But, you know, we're over to Dalnet with the bots and the kicking and everything else. And actually, right now, we're trying to still coordinate it, and currently we're sitting in the channel with no ops. So we're very much an autonomous collective, so if you ever want to call me out and not have to worry about getting kicked, now's your time! So yes, that's the current status with the IRC channel. So if you want to come over, go join over to Dalnet and join Pound Bin Rev. And I believe I'm there. I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm in there right now, last I checked.
Yeah. I think I'm in there. But yes, I think Dalnet is, right now, the semi-official IRC channel. And if we move someplace else within the immediate future, so be it. So did I explain that well?
Yeah, sounds good to me. Long story
right.
short, Dalnet for now, and stay tuned.
Yes. We may be moving relatively soon, but yeah, that's no guarantees. Who knows? We may just stay on Dalnet because, sadly enough, the type of people we attract cause, you know, certain havoc to be unleashed onto the IRC channels. So,
yeah. And by
for the good of the many,
attract,
I will stay on Dalnet and seal with the bots.
Yeah, and by type of people we attract, we mean idiot script kiddies. Didn't we do
even
a whole show on not being a kiddie?
Well, I wouldn't call these people script kiddies. I don't even know what the heck to call these people. I called them trolls for a good reason. They were acting very trollish. So, hey, trolls are trolls, no matter what you can do. I mean, you know, trolls can't be reformed. Basically, trolls are the sociopaths of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
You can't reform a sociopath, and you can't reform a troll.
That's true. That's very true.
And I'm sure I'm going to get flooded with all kinds of strange AIM spam and all kinds of crazy stuff now. Well, not now, but
well, we should set up like hatemail@binrev.com.
Hatemail shall be directed to radio@binrev.com, or if you want to talk to me directly, blackratchet@blackratchet.org,
mm-hmm.
or org, or do whatever you want to call it.
I guess
all right.
You could always send hate mail directly at me, but
who could hate you, Strom?
Oh, everyone loves me.
Except when you start going on your spelling Nazi rants.
Yes, but I tend to have misanthropic moments anyway, so whatever.
So, all right. Actually, just to, like, bring something out of the way, and, you know, this is, like, major housekeeping because we're, you know, reaching way back into the closet here. Have you checked out the Frapper map lately?
I have not. Let me go do that right now.
Yeah, tell me how many people are on the Frapper map. I mean, hurry up so I don't have to, like, constantly talk here
okay.
and fill up dead air.
It says 238 members.
238? Did you even expect us to get anywhere close to that?
No.
That's amazing.
Maybe 30, 40 people would
yeah.
on the map.
I was actually shooting for, I think we were shooting for 100, but 238, that's not bad. So in case for those people who are just like listening now and are working their way backwards, we have something called a Frapper map, and basically if you've listened to the show, we're going to ask you to plot yourself onto the map. And it's actually frapper.com, F-A-P-P-R, / Binary Revolution Radio listeners, but for those of you who can't type all that out...
It's F-R-A-P-P-R.
Did I say that wrong?
You said F-A-P-P-R. That would be frapper.com.
Frapper.com.
Far dirtier than just a map.
It's Google Maps porn. Yeah. Anyway, either way, it's tinyurl.com/8Lima5AlphaNovember. So, you know, if you're new and you haven't plotted yourself on the map yet, or if you're old and just been lazy and haven't actually done it, go ahead and do it and see if we can't push ourselves over 300.
And in fact, what I'm doing right now is I'm going to put the URL right there on the same page on our message board as all the dial-in numbers for when we're live.
What a brilliant idea.
Of course, don't forget about our map. Our Frapper map.
Look at that. We're posting it, well, semi-live. You're hearing it posted before you actually... you're seeing it posted before you actually hear it posted. That's the amazing thing of internet radio.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
You get to hear me post live on BinRev.
Isn't it amazing?
OMG.
I don't know. Well, technically we have the call-in numbers, but I don't think we're going to be using those tonight considering we're not live.
Right. Well, I guess if you have a pen and paper out and you want to write them down for future reference, our toll-free number when we're live in the U.S. is 888-9-BINREV. From outside the U.S., it's country code 1-213-415-1047. And our U.K. call-in is country code 440-845-646-0102. And remember to drop the O off the front of the 845 if you're dialing from outside the UK.
If you're downloading, you know, if you're dialing from outside the UK, I'm wondering.
Yeah, you have this. The O prefix is from when you're dialing from within the UK. If you're dialing from outside the UK, you dial, you know, whatever your international access code is, and then 44, and then just launch straight into the 845.
I wonder why they actually just make it, you know, 0845 and not have it 0845.
The 0 is a special dialing code within the UK. I can't remember the exact function, but I'll look it up. But supposedly the 0845 numbers are cheap special services numbers, and it only costs 1 penny a minute from within Britain to call. So that's BT's standard rate, so if you're listening live in the UK and you want to give us a call, it's only 1p a minute. A 20-minute call will only cost you 20 pence, so dial in.
What's that, like, you know, $2?
20 pence is like maybe 35, 40 cents.
Oh, okay. I don't know. British money's so weird. Decimal system. I don't want to, like, you know, 15 pence and a half a crown.
British money has been the decimal system since, like, the 60s or the 70s.
It has? No, it hasn't, because I remember watching Doctor Who, and they're making fun of someone because they thought there was the British monetary system was on a decimal scale.
Maybe the Doctor Who episode predated the decimalization, but I'm fairly sure the decimalization.
Yeah, I'm pretty
happened.
Sure it was at least the late 70s, early 80s. For those of you who are listening in the UK, please email us, radio@binrev.com, and find out when the...
Oh, I'll just look it up.
No, don't look it up. We'll actually have a little research project for our UK listeners.
Okay.
You know, just email us and tell us when the... And this is only for UK listeners, none of you Americans. Tell us when the UK monetary system went decimal. And also, write a small treatise on why they should not go to the euro.
That'd be a treatise, not a treatise, but...
Treatise. All right, do you want to go into email before I start mispronouncing other words?
Yeah, let's do that. Our first email of the evening is from Timmy G. And Timmy writes...
Timmy G!
Timmy G!
Yeah. Timmy! Timmy! Timmy!
It's anyway. I've never even seen that episode of South Park, and I still know all about it. Anyway, the email reads, Strom, Ratchet, and insert random co-host here. That's become a bit cliched, really, but meh. Greetings from the UK. You never know, I may bother to stay up till 2 a.m. and contact you guys for a live show. I'm that hardcore. Winky face. By the way, Zygmunt was great on the last two episodes. Have him on more often, rather than hiding him away on the phones. Great April Fool's Day tricks. I kind of panicked at the thought of Lucky looking after Binrev. Although that pink color scheme was frankly horrible. Whatever Rykos has been saying. Anyway, my obligatory question. What exactly is a Stack Overflow, and how do all these exploits involving buffer slash Stack Overflows work? I mean, I understand what a buffer is, but surely the OS slash programming language automatically checks if the buffer isn't going to crash the PC if too much info is put in it? The same with Stack Overflows. How do you prevent them in your code? Please don't tell me I have to painstakingly error check everything. Timmy G.
Well, just to get this out in the open, first off, Stack Overflows can also be referred to as smashing the stack. And if you basically, if you Google that term, you come up with all kinds of fun things about Stack Overflows and stack smashing. And actually, don't we have like a listener called Stack Smasher?
I forget. There is someone on the forum named Stack Smasher, although I don't recall seeing him post in a while.
I don't know. I do remember him sending an email to the show, so maybe he listens.
Yeah, well, I guess while you're doing your thing, I'll look up if and when Stack Smasher's been on.
Yeah, because you just like looking up things on the internet. Yes. And to answer your question, no, the PC or the operating system does not check whether or not the too much information is put into the stack, with some exceptions, which we will talk about later. So, let me take a deep breath here, because this is I spent a while typing this out. In a stack-based overrun, the program exploit is basically, it uses a memory object known as a stack to store user input. So when you type in your, you know, what is your name? My name is Black Ratchet. Stores it into a stack in this type of case. Normally, the stack would be empty until, you know, someone actually enters user input, at which point the program writes a return memory address to the stack, and then the user input is placed on top of it. If you don't know what a stack is, first off, I'll just get this out in the open. If you don't know what a stack is, find out. I'm not going to explain it right here because it's one of those basic computing programming things. If you run with queues and arrays and all kinds of fun stuff. So, user puts his input, and they write the address, they put the user input on top of it. When the stack is processed, the user's input gets sent to the return address specified by the program. However, the issue with the stack is that it does not have an infinite size. The programmer who develops the code, you know, he needs to reserve a specific amount of space within the, or for the stack so he can, you know, store it in memory and not have, you know, issues of a 4-gigabyte stack, as it were. If the user's input is longer than the stack, some stack will overflow. You know, longer than the stack, obviously you're going to have user input spilling out all over the place. This in itself really isn't a huge problem, but it becomes a security hole when it's combined with malicious input. I don't know. For example, suppose a program is waiting for a user to enter, you know, let's go back to my example, his or her name. I get prompted, you know, please enter your name. Rather than entering my name, I'm going to enter a kind of a command that that exceeds the stack size. So the command is usually something short. Let's say in this case, you know, some type of Unix environment, I'm going to typically enter a command called, you know, exec shell. Basically, what this does is it tells the system to open a command prompt window or some type of thing. And because it, you know, if the program is running as root, it's going to open up a root shell. And if you don't know why that's bad, you know, you need to find out more about Unix. Overflowing the buffer with an executable command doesn't necessarily mean that the command will be executed. However, the attacker basically must specify a return address that points to, you know, said malicious command. The program partially crashes because the stack is overflowed, but when it tries to recover by going to the return address, it needs to know exactly, the attacker needs to know exactly what the return address is to point to the command that the attacker specified. This is rather difficult. So to get around needing the actual address, the malicious command is often padded with something called a NOP sled. And for those of you who don't know what NOP is, it stands for no operation in assembler. And it just basically, it does exactly what it means. There's no operation here. Don't do anything. Now, what the attacker does is basically pads his command with a bunch of NOPs. So he doesn't need to know the exact address, but if he has a good idea of where it is, the computer will start reading, okay, no operation, no operation, no operation, no operation. Oh, exact, a root shell right here. As opposed to if he entered, like, no data, the computer will start reading a bunch of garbage and probably lock up before it hits actually that, you know, execute a root shell. The last part of the equation is the executable program information. Basically, most operating systems know how to control the access level of who's currently logged in. I kind of mentioned this before. Executable programs typically require a higher level of permissions for the user who's currently logged in. Say, for example, when you're logging into Windows, the actual login session needs to be running as a system, which is very low level and very high. It's low level but high permissions, so it actually runs as a system. On Unix, it would actually probably be running as root or running in kernel mode. When a stack overflows, it runs a command found at the new return address, and the program still thinks it's running, so that means new command prompt window will be opened with the same permissions as the program is running. So this is an issue. This is why people should always run, say, Unix daemons or services on Windows as an account that has permission only to run that service, as opposed to, say, root on Linux or administrator on Windows. So the easiest way to protect both you and your box is to run some sort of stack smashing protection. There have been several implementations of stack smashing protection, two of the most common being, StackGuard and SSP. And I believe SSP is also known as ProPolice. I forget it. I've heard of StackGuard. SSP is, I think, a bit more popular, but I haven't actually started playing around with that. Typically, what the stack smashing protection does is it modifies the organization of data in the stack frame of a function called. And basically, what it does is they call it a canary value. And if it actually, when you're overflowing the stack, it overwrites that canary value in the stack protection. If it doesn't see that canary value, it knows something is wrong, so it'll just, you know, completely blow everything away.
I'm very amused by the canary analogy.
Well, and actually, for those of you who don't know what the canary analogy is, back in the day of, like, you know, early 1900s, when miners used to go into coal mines, one of the issues they used to face is natural gas. And natural gas by itself is completely odorless and colorless. The smell that you get with natural gas is actually added, well, like at your home when you're turning on your gas stove, is actually added within the natural gas depot. It's actually quite interesting. So since natural gas is odorless and colorless, they used to carry these little canary cages with them with a little canary inside. And because canary is so small, the canary would die before anyone would notice the natural gas is there. It would actually die of the same problems the miners would die of, which is lack of oxygen. So if you saw the canary die, you know you were fucked. You need to get out of there now. I dropped the F-bomb there. Oh, well. Actually, a complete tangent here. One of my personal favorite cartoons from the Far Side, which was a cartoon that used to run up until the mid-90s from the early 80s, I think, is they had this big, the scene was this nuclear control room of a nuclear reactor, and all of a sudden some guy's looking at this canary and says, "Everybody out, the canary's mutated!" And you get the canary with three eyes.
Oh, that's great, yeah. Man.
Man, if you ever have a chance to pick up a Far Side book, do it. It's absolutely hilarious.
I can't believe it just suddenly occurs to me that there are people who listen to our show regularly who have never read The Far Side.
It's kind of depressing, isn't it?
It's depressing and it's terrifying. It's like, my God, am I getting that old?
Yeah. So anyway, so if it overwrites canary value, the system looks for that canary value. If it doesn't see it there, discards the entire input and knows something is up, so it should actually protect it. It may, you know, say, for example, you know, crash the program or stop the program from executing, but at the same time, you won't actually run into a problem where this attack will succeed and someone will root your box. So basically, you know, ProGuard, SSP, StackGuard, or not ProGuard, ProPolice, defeats mostly this entire class of attacks. Whew. I need a glass of water or something. How about a beer instead? Like a beer.
Beer sounds like a damn good
indeed
idea.
Indeed it does. This what? Email brought to you by Newport Storm.
Yeah,
what's our next now, email tonight? Hopefully it's going to be a shorter response than that.
Yeah. Oh, before we go into that, one of my friends is actually listening to me talk right now, and he says, if it's C and C++, when you're writing your code, you really have to check, because there's a lot of stuff that's, you really have to check your code, basically, for buffer overflow problems. There's stuff that can help, like non-executable stacks, but that isn't guaranteed on all operating systems, and apparently C is a very portable language. So it's really best to implement the security checks inside the code. Alternatively, people can sacrifice a little bit of performance for security and use languages like C# and Java, which are much less tolerant of overflowing / bounds issues. Then you
yeah,
can
but Java
be a
sucks.
Programmer. Yeah, but you can be a lazier programmer with Java. And isn't that what everyone aspires
yeah,
to?
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
All right. Hey,
so, yeah, I mean, you can start, you know, checking. I mean, I the reason why I suggested ProPolice and StackGuard and all that wonderful stuff is because that's stuff that I actually kind of know about. As for, I mean, I haven't programmed C++ since 2003 when I was in college, so I haven't touched C++ in there. I don't know much about handling buffer overflows and all that stuff. That's why I usually deal with Perl, because it doesn't have to deal with most of that stuff, I think. Either way, I'm sure people, if you have, like, you know, more direct comments on how to handle this within the actual program itself, please, you know, feel free to write in, and we will read your email on air.
Our next email is, get ready, it's a phone email.
Oh, God, people are tuning out right now. I expect this email will take about 5 minutes, so if you want to, like, fast forward your iPod 5 minutes, feel free.
That was just me pretending to be fast-forwarded. Anyway, it's from Powdered Snow, and he says, I assume it's a he, hey, Black Rat /Strom Carlson. This weekend, me and some friends were coming home from a day of snowboarding and decided to do some wilderness exploration. After going down a dirt road near the west entrance of Manning Park, British Columbia, we found a payphone, booth and all. I took some pictures to document the find. As you can see from the picture, the number is area code 604... 869-9106. I found this in a 250 area code location where the nearest town is about 2 hours away. Someone has brought this phone into the woods for some reason that I don't know. I'm a curious person. I was wondering if there's listing of Canadian payphones out there somewhere so I can find where it came from. Thanks a lot. Powdered Snow, Langley, British Columbia, Canada. P.S. I just added it to Yapple.
Yeah, so he actually attached some photos with this, and I need to put it up somewhere. I
haven't looked at the photo yet. Is it a telephone?
It's a telephone, but the telephone's on its side, and the telephone booth is on its side. And they're all basically laying down in it.
Yeah, no. Is it a telephone? Is it a telephone?
Yes, it's a telus.
Okay.
Telus, no. Anyway, that's just weird. Personally, I'd either A, you know, claim salvage rights to it if it was in public land, or take it for my own... Oh, I have the hiccups. Nefarious purposes. Or the other alternative is to call TELUS. I don't know what you would say to them. Hey, I found this payphone in the woods. What do you want me to do with it? I'm thinking it's possibly that they don't know what the heck's going on.
Yeah.
As for Yapple, thanks for the thought. But personally, we try to keep a list of working payphones.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe... Send it to me, and I'll put it up on my website or something.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. That is for sure. I will give them that. As for your request, see if you want to find a list. Phone companies keep their payphone numbers secret for some odd and insane reason. Don't ask me why. However, judging from the location, the fact that the telephone, the fact that it's 2 hours from any nearest town, I'm going to guess that this possibly was stolen and uprooted. So perhaps if you call TELUS and tell them about it and say, I'm just really curious where the heck this phone came from, and ask them really nicely and, you know, say pretty please with sugar on top, they may tell you, because it's beyond bizarre. It really is. Actually, if you call that number, you get a nod to the service recording, and the trailer is very interesting. It says something like, you know, 7032. What actually that means, I have no clue, but hey.
Shall we dial it right on the air here?
Wasn't someone complaining that we don't make enough phone calls?
Let's
go dial it on the air and please this, you know, one person that was complaining that, hey, you guys don't make enough phone calls with on the show.
Can you hear that?
Yes, I can. That was not the trailer I got.
Yeah, weird. So yes, long story short, it's a fucked number.
I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Just try to talk to TELUS if you want. Or, hey, no one will notice it. You got a nice little phone booth sitting on the ground there. I'm not sure if I mentioned this before. The phone booth sitting on the ground actually is sitting on the ground, as in the side is on the ground like it's been tipped over. And actually, I need to post these photos someplace, because there are pretty hilarious photos.
Well, I mean, send them to me, and I'll put them on my page, because my page is kind of all bizarre phone stuff anyway. So.
Oh, you're just bizarre in general.
It'll fit. Oh, yes, but. I'm a switchman. It's kind of funny. Someone actually on the forums posted something like a parody, Hacks a Ring for Dummies, and the four dummies person has the weird googly eyes, and he says, I'm a switchman. And
I don't know, should we wish someone a happy birthday today?
Let's not do that publicly on the radio.
Okay, I didn't know if you wanted to do that, so we can edit that out.
Yeah, I'll edit that out.
Okay.
But, anyway.
What's our next email, Strom?
Anyway, I showed that to Evan Doorbell, and he was quite amused. So, he gives it his thumbs up. Our next email is from Old Skull. Is it Old Skull or Old School?
I'm assuming it's Old School. I've actually seen him someplace. I don't know where it was.
Okay. Because it's O-L-D-S-K-O-L. So, anyway. It says, hey, Black Ratchet and Strom. Maybe you can... I always do that, don't I? I'm like, hey, whenever I start the email.
Hey! It's like Fonzie. Hey!
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Mr. C!
I could always read them in, like, a really thick South African accent.
No, let's not do that.
Okay. Hey, Black Ratchet and Strom, maybe you can point me in the right direction. There's a communications tower in my neighborhood, and I'm trying to determine who owns it and what carrier/services operate from it. The landowner is absentee, so no luck there. I imagine this is public domain info, but I don't have a clue about where to find it. Can you help? P.S. I dig the show in the bin rev scene. Keep up the good work, and thanks for your efforts. If I see you at DEF CON, the beers are on me. Old School.
Figures, the 1 year I'm not going to DEF CON.
Woo! Double the free beer for
me.
Yeah,
screw you. Old School, you better be going to Hope. Actually, well, I guess we'll talk about that first. Lacking squares, I can go update my the Hope nonsense. Old School, I think your best shot as to finding out who is licensed for the tower and who actually has equipment on it is to consult the FCC license database. Actually, assuming this is in the United States, I didn't actually know where you are. Anyway, the FCC license database is tinyurl.com/foxoscarwhiskey5whiskey. There's actually an option right there. It says use latitude and longitude search. I think that's probably your best option. Also, there should be some kind of way of connecting to the landowner. You might want to, you know, inquire your city hall and say, Hey, who owns this parcel of land right here? Perhaps, who would actually be?
It's more effective if he goes, hey!
Yeah, dry in a nice leather jacket, slick your hair back and say, hey! And how little lady will be like, oh my god, it's Fonzie! That's another depressing, it's probably because most people don't actually get the hey reference. I'm just feeling old right now.
We're getting really old. We're going to have the Binary Revolution wheelchair and wrinkle cream tour.
No, we'll be like golf and we'll have the Binary Revolution senior tour.
I like the wheelchair tour idea better.
So you go to your city hall. I guess you would want to say possibly someone, maybe your city clerk or your tax collection agency, and... or hell, just, you know, talk to the information desk and say, hey, I'm curious who actually owns this little parcel of land right here, and they'll probably be able to point you into the right direction.
Well, also, the other thing that I think is that all property values are supposed to be published in the paper annually.
Oh, really?
Do they do... At least here in Los Angeles and in Las Vegas, they publish all property values and who owns that piece of property in the paper on an annual basis. It's for tax assessment reasons.
I know... Oh, so, tax assessor. That's what I was looking at. Yeah, not tax collector. Yeah. I know that in Massachusetts they have something like that. I know that they do it per annual, but I'm not sure if they actually post it in the paper, but it is a matter of public record. And I know, for example, if you owe taxes, they will publish you in the paper. And it's actually... It's pretty interesting. I'm actually going to talk about my dad on Binary Revolution Radio. He'll be proud. My dad, basically, when this paper comes out, he sits in his big easy chair, he watches over and says, oh my god, that bum so-and-so owes $15 bazillion! It's actually quite amusing to find out who in your neighborhood owes taxes.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it's seriously, it's better than gossip.
Crazy, absolutely crazy.
Yeah, so, you know, tax assessor, city clerk, or just talk to the information desk and say, you know, you're interested in finding out who actually owns or pays taxes for a certain parcel of land. Or possibly go to your, what's it called? County records. I'm not sure. It may be city records, it may be state records. I'm not exactly sure how it varies between state to state, but in Massachusetts there is a... county record office, and actually I believe there's actually a copy of the state too, where it's, you know, they basically hold copies of every land transaction since, you know, they started keeping records of it. It's pretty impressive. You actually walk into these buildings, it's row upon row of just books. It's eerie. And you got the little lady with, like, you know, the half moon glasses behind the desk saying, can I help you?
Those stereotypical 50s half-moon glasses.
Yes. You know, the one without the rims on the top and then just, you know, the little metal thing around their neck. Some places, I think, actually have their records online, so you may want to look into that, too.
And if you walk into the assessor's office and find yourself in a Far Side cartoon that you don't recognize, well, you should have taken our advice and read the Far Side.
Yes, it's like, you know, middle something school for the gifted, where the sign says push, but he's pulling.
Yeah, I think the sign says pull, but he's pushing.
Or something like that. I forget what it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, that wraps it up for the email this evening. We're kind of going off on all kinds of chances. This is what happens when we don't have a guest.
We're not live.
Yeah, just so you know, we did have a guest this evening, but he was unavoidably detained, and he had to, I'm not going to use the term bail, but I was just about to. He had to skedaddle off. And, you know, he had a good excuse, so it's no big deal, but we're going to go ahead with the topic. The topic tonight, I'm just going to, like, really freak people out, but...
We need fancy topic intro music, like, da-da-da-da-da-da!
Oh, that was better as anything. The topic tonight is jizz mopping.
Woohoo!
Yeah, Strom is an expert on this.
Yes.
See,
now Stank's going to be on your case, not mine.
Exactly. Well, I'm not talking about lube, so I'm okay. Jizz mopping. We'll talk about it later. Potentially, it's a malware removal and tools, tips, and techniques. But we'll talk about that later. Anyway.
Jizz mopping sounds more fun anyway.
Yeah, we'll explain the jizz mopping term later. Strom, what have you been doing this week?
This week, as far as hacking goes, Nothing majorly fancy. How about you?
Well, I actually haven't been doing much this week, but today in Boston began the Linux World Conference and Expo. And I am in attendance for today and tomorrow. Linux World is very interesting today. We'll get the very interesting story out of the way first.
This is a fun one.
I was talking to Strom via IM while all this happened.
I was like, it was early in the morning here in Los Angeles. It was like 6:30, 7 a.m. or something. I was up. I just showered. I'm chatting with Ratchet.
Man, I'm on the hip top. So, actually, let's start from the beginning. We'll actually leave the fun story for a little bit later. I come to Linux World, and they say, "Do you have your barcode?" And I said, "No, I don't have a barcode. You guys didn't send me anything. I just got emails. I registered." And they say, "Oh, okay, you'll have to come over here." And they have these little terminals you set up, and you say, please enter your first name, please enter your last name, please enter your zip code. And I say, I enter Black, I enter Ratchet, obviously not, but enter my zip code. And it says, "Okay, here you are. Is this the person you were searching for? If so, please press print." And I said, "Okay, yeah, this is me. This is only one person that's shown up in the search. Where the hell is the print button?" And I look, and I look, and I go back, and I re-enter again. And I look, and there's no print button. I call the guy over and say, "There's no print button." He looks at it, and he says, "Well, try it again." And I said, "Okay." And I try it again, and there's no print button. And he says, "Well, did you use one of these super expensive conference passes?" And I said, no, I used the exhibit-only one and the one of your special deals." And he said, "Oh, well, you need to head over to this terminal over here." So I go over to the other side, and this other person comes over to me, and I explain the situation. And she says, "Oh, okay, well, just go over." And I enter all my data again, and it says, "Please print the print button." Still no freaking print button. And I call her over, and I say, "There's no print button." And she says, "Really? Did you register? It's right here. Here's all my data. There's no print button." And she says, "Are you sure?" I'm like, I re-enter all my data in front of her, and she says, "Oh, that's supposed to be a print button there." And I say, "Well, yeah." So eventually it boils down to, she says, "Well, I'm not sure what I can do for you. The computer needs to be, I actually run into this one of those situations. The computer needs this data to happen." And I say, "Okay." And I say, "Well, what can I do?" And she says, "Well, if you want, I can just give you this little passcode that'll give you an exhibit only, and we'll give you this, free little bonus offer that you registered for." And I said, I guess I wasn't really looking forward to that anyway, so go ahead. So eventually that's actually sorted out, and I get my exhibit only pass, which was actually kind of sad. We won't get into that. And I skedaddled up, because this actually took about a half hour. I was hoping it was going to take about 15 minutes. And I actually go up to the keynote speaker, who was Nicholas? I think that's his name. I'm drawing a blank on it now, of course, on the radio show. Nicholas Negroponte, which is, he is the guy at MIT in charge of the $100 laptop, which, if you haven't heard of, I'm glad you came out of your cave and are listening to BinRev Radio, but you should really look onto Google. And his keynote speech was rather interesting, but I was really hoping he'd have like some type of, prototype or demonstration of the, laptop that he's trying to produce. But sadly, no such luck there. But it was rather interesting. My one complaint about his ideas is that he's putting a lot of... He keeps on saying, "Oh, we're going to hope the open source community will develop all these applications for it." And I look at it as, and I say, open source community is really wonderful, but at the same point, you're expecting all these wonderful high things out of them. But if you look at, he says, "I need a word, we're hopefully going to get a word processor, and we're hopefully going to get this, and we're going to get that. And we're going to hopefully get a bunch of third-party applications for the, $100 laptop." And I just thought to myself, you might get one word processor, but that's about it. But at the same time, you're probably going to get about 15,000 MP3 players.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy definitely has his head screwed on right, and he's doing a very noble effort, and he's really he's quite doing a Herculean effort trying to get all this stuff accepted. But at the same point, I do kind of feel that he's expecting a lot of things in the community, the open source community, that may or may not happen. Who knows? So after the keynote speech, I head down to the exhibit floor, and I'm down there for about 15 minutes. And I'm walking along, and I'm checking out all kinds of things, and I pass the Unisys booth, and I look upside the Unisys booth, and it's got this giant...
Oh, before you get to this,
about
5 or 10 minutes before this, we're discussing, he said, oh, I walked past the, it was the Gentoo booth, right?
Yes, it was the Gentoo booth. I'm sorry, I forgot. Yes. Thank you for bringing this up. I completely forgot this point of the conversation.
Yeah, see, this is what makes it so funny. We talked about the Gentoo booth, and I think you joked about burning it to the ground or something.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, exactly. And the Gentoo booth, maybe I should burn it to the ground.
Yeah, and then I think I made a joke that it's been discovered that Ubuntu is an African word for I can't configure Slackware.
Which I think is the best line ever.
Yeah. But, so anyway, so not 5 minutes after he makes this joke about burning down the Gentoo booth, what happens at the Unisys booth?
I walk by the Unisys booth, and I see black smoke pouring out of it. I wouldn't say pouring out of it, but a noticeable column of black smoke arising from the presentation area. And I say, boy, that must be doing some type of weird demo. And I look back about, 15 seconds later, and I figure it's just going to be a cloud of smoke. And I look back, and smoke is still going out. And I say, that is not right. That shouldn't be happening. That probably isn't a demo. And at this point, I'm walking by, and I look, and there's no presentation going on. And I go, uh-oh. And all of a sudden, two guys come running out in these orange, shirts, saying, fire, fire, fire. And I go, oh, shit. And at this point, I go, okay, fire. I need to get up the escalator and out of the building. And all these people are running around and, trying to get there. And I see security guards running all over the place. And I'm just looking at it going, oh, my God. And I go up and I run up the escalator. And for those of you who have never been to the Boston Convention Center, it's this, the exhibition floor is actually, below the main entrance. It's pretty neat. It's a huge facility. And I get pretty close to the door, at which point I turn around and I know I can evacuate if I see this rush of people coming at me. And I look and I just look through this glass window and everything, and I see smoke pouring out. Actually, while walking up the stairs, I do turn around and I do take a picture of the smoke pouring out the Unisys booth. So that will be posted on my website. And I see everything pouring out and I just go, oh my God, this is unbelievable. And I eventually, I see someone hit it with a fire extinguisher, so I know it's out. And I say, Boston Fire Department is going to be showing up any moment now, and I just want to get out of their way. So I get out of the building, and I see, I think it was a rescue, 3 engines, 2 ladders, 2 district chiefs, and just an amazing...
Like a third of the Boston Fire Department.
I wouldn't say a third. No, the Boston Fire Department is pretty good. But this response, for those who don't know, I before I was into computers, I was into listening to fire radios and, fire, basically falling around fire departments and going to fires. It's a hobby in Massachusetts. I'm not sure if it's a hobby anywhere else. And this type of response is absolutely unprecedented. So it was pretty amusing, and I basically, for about 15 minutes, I basically sat outside and I just watched the fire guys do their thing. And they eventually take this, I see some, firefighter just come out of the building carrying a smoking bunch, like pile of cables. And I'm like, well, okay, I guess that was the issue right there. And they just set it down in front of an engine. They just hose it down. So, in Linux world, there was a fire, and I'm never buying Unisys software ever again. I actually did want to come down and while the firefighters were standing around the booth, take a photo of it with the Unisys logo and put a caption on it like Unisys, the choice of Boston Fire Department. But they actually
that would have been classic.
Yeah, right? they left too quickly. I was very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, well, that's my humor story. So Linux World almost burnt the Boston Convention Center down to the ground. But thankfully, the speedy response of the renter cops saved it. As for other interesting things, I gotta say,
fire department aren't renter cops.
Well, no. Well, the renter cops actually did hit it with the fire extinguisher, and the units of people did as well. So,
okay.
Yeah. But the fire department did actually come out, make sure everything was out. Actually, the swag this year was kind of low, I gotta say, compared to last year. I was disappointed. And there's no Microsoft booth. Last year there was a Microsoft booth, but Microsoft decided not to come to Linux World this year, which made me sad. The two interesting things I did, I'm going to give, I guess this is kind of a commercial plug, asteriskmall.com. And I actually went to their website, and it kind of sucked. But apparently they're a spinoff of BSD Mall. But they have this very interesting thing, and it's an Asterisk PBX. And basically what they do is they take computers off lease, toss the motherboard into this little sort of, you know, it's a very small case, and make it so it actually is about the size of a normal commercial PBX. And I got to say, it looked rather impressive. And the guy did know what he was talking about, and I did, you know, chat with him for a while about various things, and It was very interesting, and the fact that they had two little Linksys phones, and they're all working and everything, so it apparently it works, and it was kind of impressive.
Yeah,
so you might want to check them out. And
the egregious thing about it is that it runs Asterisk at Home.
Asterisk at Home just has everything installed on it, and everyone, and you know, it's very point and drool. So I can't really fault them for that.
Point and drool.
And actually, I was walking through, there's a little place called the .org Pavilion where they give little, you know, conference space to nonprofits and all that kind of stuff for free. And I was actually kind of disappointed I didn't try to make a bin rep booth, but I doubt they would have let that. However, I did run into the folks from the Linux Link Tech Show, which I was kind of shocked that they were actually there. For those of you who don't know what it is, it's a weekly Linux show, and that's why they're at Linux World, in case you haven't figured it out yet. And they do have us on their webpage, so I came over and said, hey, I'm Black Ratchet, I'm from BinRev, and they were like, oh my god, you guys, it was my first kind of brush with celebrity-dom. It was kind of amazing. We chatted for a while, and they were all very cool guys, so I'm going to plug them. It's tllts.info, Tango Lima Lima Tango Sierra. And they're actually probably going to be our site of the week, too. So check them out. They actually did the broadcast this afternoon and taped it there, so I actually wasn't there. I had to leave early.
Didn't you say they interviewed you?
Actually, yes, they did interview me. The guy said, hey, do you want to be interviewed, or do you want to make like a... And I was like, well, if you guys want to, and they asked me about BinRev and all that wonderful stuff, and I'm not sure if I actually should download their episode tonight and try to listen to it before I go to bed, see if I was actually on the show or not, but I assume that I will be on at one point. Asked me about everything, and
cool.
Thank Dog, and I actually was sad and I didn't invite Strom, but couldn't put them on speakerphone because I don't have a speakerphone anymore, and I don't think the interview would have worked well. But they're actually very strong. I will say they were very impressed with our Super 31337 Asterisk streaming setup.
Wow. I mean, I think it's kludge-tacular, but it does seem to impress
Yes,
you,
it does.
So.
And I don't even want to know what they're actually going to think when we actually, you know, put you in your 2200 kilohertz glory or whatever it is.
Well, what's going to happen is they're just kind of, you know, die from shock.
Yeah, I hope they won't listen to this episode.
They'll all have heart attacks and pass out. Yeah.
But yeah, they actually were very nice. They're really great guys. They were very friendly. We talked for probably about 50 minutes, and they gave me a t-shirt, and a t-shirt that fits, which is amazing because I'm portly. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, see, the problem is all the t-shirts are way too small for you, and they're all way too huge for me.
Well, Everyone, see, my friend Red Nerd came up with this theory, and they say computer geeks are either zeros or ones. They're either really, really thin or really, really fat. And at conventions, they only have XL, which doesn't fit either. So.
That's weird, because last I checked, everything was large, not XL.
Really? I usually see XL at conventions. Either way.
Well, I mean, I haven't really done the convention thing for years, so I'm used to the way it used to be way back when, in like 2001, where, you know, things were large, not extra.
All those things you see on the news about Mercury getting fatter, I guess it's kind of approaching conventions. Anyway, we've sort of taken our sweet time with Linux Royalty. Let's go get on to our main topic and try to blow through that. But I think what's interesting with
okay.
the whole...
Jizz-mopping.
Yeah, jizz-mopping. So anyway, since I decided to have this show, and we're going to talk about... Since it's spring now, spring's officially here, let's go talk about spring-cleaning computers, because the other half of this is I've actually had to deal with this horribly infested computer with spyware over the past week or so, and I'm ripping out what little hair I have left. So anyway, I came up with this term back. I would say like back when I started doing this for pay. I call it jizz mopping because it's for those of you who've never
Black Ratchet's jizz mopping service.
Exactly. I should get business cards that say that.
License number 31337.
For those of you who've never watched Clerks by Kevin Smith, you should. But one of the things they come up with is I wonder what a jizz mopper makes. And it's for those of you who don't know, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's one of the most disgusting jobs in the world. And when you're dealing with spyware, it's right there. It's spyware, malware, all this wonderful stuff. You know, it's essentially what it is. It's basically going around a computer with a mop and just cleaning up all the little disgusting bits. And for those of you who are actually airing this on air, I'm wanting to apologize to Advance for calling it that, but actually it's not really Advance because I've been calling it already. But that's what it is. It really is. There's no better term for it. You know, spring cleaning, all this wonderful stuff, and so I'm decided to have a topic of, you know, talking about various things, tips, techniques, and all this kind of stuff.
See, my technique really so far has been, the computer is fucked, I'm just going to wipe and start over. And just kind of do it right from the beginning.
Well, still, when you're talking about someone coming up to you and say, basically, normally what this always boils down to is, oh, my aunt's computer is messed up. Can you please take a look at it? And I look at it, and it's kind of like, you know, it takes about half an hour to boot up, and you double-click on Internet Explorer, and it takes about 10 minutes for it to load itself onto the screen. And this is what happens with spyware. It's annoying, it's stupid, and the spyware developers have no clue on how to actually run a successful operation, because technically, when you install the stuff, it should be as less footprint as anything, so no one would notice that it's really slow, and they wouldn't install it. But we're going to thank God for small favors, and we're going to thank them that, you know, spyware developers are stupid and can't code jack. So, we're going to go to...
I'm sure there's a Romanian joke in here somewhere.
There's always a Romanian joke, or a Polish joke, for that matter. I want to go over the tools, and these are the ones that I've kind of posted on. First off, there's the host file, and if you don't know what the host file is, it's basically a... Actually, I really don't know how to explain it. It's essentially, it's a way of bypassing domain name services. Let's say, for example, if you want to... create a bunch of, say if you want to have like, you know, www.supercooleliteHacker.com point to a certain website or something, you can go into your host file and say, you know, if I ever ask for, you know, superelitehacker.com, point to this IP address. And
well, like, one thing it's also good for is, like, say you've just, like, you're setting up a box and you need to be able to address it by name, but the DNS records haven't propagated yet, and you don't want to wait around for the day or two for it to propagate. You can go into your host file and say, okay, you know, dogballs.stromcarlson.com is really this IP address. So whenever I call it dogballs.stromcarlson.com, just know that it's that.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the other uses for it.
Yeah.
But one of the other things about that is, besides, you know, specifying a certain name that isn't in DNS, is that you can also use it to override certain names that are in DNS. And this is more of a prevention thing than actually curing it, but if you want, there's actual services out there that basically try to blacklist all adware services, and just they provide host files that basically redirect any type of spyware services to a non-existent IP address or to an IP address that basically refers to it as to the computer itself. So it essentially nullifies all that. So that's the first thing you want to do. Actually, Droop's, and I don't have the URL for this, which is really sad, so you might want to ask him directly. I'm sure, like, you know, 1,000 people are going to be emailing him tomorrow. Droops maintains a host file that actually does some of this, and allegedly it's quite well. I haven't actually used it myself, but it basically nullifies a lot of this and does quite a good job, or so he says. And he maintains it. Also, there's a couple of other services out there, and I actually don't have links for this. That's actually kind of sad. There's a couple of services out there where it's, they provide host files that blacklist a lot of adware services. Going on to the actual removal tools, there's a very nice site out there, and it's called I'm going to give you the tiny URL, tinyurl.com/India Echo Bravo India. I'm actually shocked. Most of the tiny URLs tonight are four digits. Or four characters.
Yes. Wow.
Anyway, the site I just gave, it's by this wonderful, you know, Netherland person by the name of Merlin, or Sandals Merlin, I'm sorry. And he does a lot of...
They're called the Dutch.
Netherlandic. I like Netherlandic. It sounds a lot better. Anyway, the Dutch, this Dutch person whose handle is Merlin. And his three big tools, along with a lot of other stuff, he does a great job with the stuff that comes in very handy. The three tools that he provides that I use a lot are Hijack This, Startup List, and CWS Shredder. Now, Hijack This, it's a general homepage hijack removal and detector and remover. He initially based it on an article called Hijacked, which is tinyurl.com/A3IndiaLima. Again, four characters, amazing. He does a very good job.
Wow.
Actually, I believe he actually sold this to McAfee, or maybe it was another utility. The utility itself is really updated to detect and remove new type of styles of hijacks that spyware users provide or use. I guess the proper term, I guess, could be exploit. While it doesn't actually target, say, you know, such and such of ad program, you know, that's a nasty one, remove it. It basically, it's like a very sharp knife, and you can kill yourself easily, very easily, or you can remove the nasty bits. And essentially what it does is profiles the events hijackers use to force you onto their sites. But the problem is, as a result of this, false positives definitely are going to happen. And unless you're really sure what you know what you're doing, which you can actually get the hang of it quite easily, despite what the disclaimers say, like, for example, if you're giving this to your aunt and you're not directly sitting at the computer, you should really tell her to consult with someone who actually knows what the heck they're doing before, say, deleting anything or removing certain settings. Another one of his tools is, like I said, Startup List. It's a really simple tool that lists basically any and all, every auto-starting program on your system. And for those of you who have never dealt with this, there are like 15 billion ways on a Windows system to get something to automatically start with the computer turning on. And it's...
Yeah, I mean, literally, I stopped paying attention to how that worked after Windows 3.1, and I am just amazed because, I mean, the last time I looked at it, there was just the autoexec file, there .winini and sys.ini, and that was it.
Yeah.
And now it's just, it's so horrifyingly complex.
It's scary. It really is. Literally, unless you really have a good idea of what your system is running, and even if you do have that, just run this program on your computer, and I almost guarantee you, you will be surprised as to what might be running up with your system when it starts. Personally, I use this to, it's really common to use it for trouble, malfunctioning system, but it also really is handy for Trojan horses and viral infections. And as always, spyware, malware, all that kind of stuff. It's a really sweet program. This guy does an amazing job. I don't give him enough props. I really need to find out his full name. His final program, which is basically how I found this, Hijack This was really a program that came out that I found after, basically just, strumming around a site for a while. His first program that he really came out with, and apparently the spyware haters, spyware users or creators really hate him for this, is called CWS Shredder. And for those of you who don't know what CWS stands for, it's a spyware program called Cool Web Search, which is just the most obnoxious title ever. Basically, I think this is one of his first programs. It's a small utility for removing Cool Web Search, which goes for 15 different domains. Like Cool WW Search, You Find All, White Pages, literally there's dozens of names. And he wrote this program because a couple of other tools that are used, like AdAware or SpyBot Search and Destroy, don't do a complete job of removing this hijacking or in spyware. And he basically updates this because they constantly... The actual spyware provider constantly updates his program, and SpyBot Search and Destroy and AdAware don't always keep up. SpyBot Search and Destroy actually does a much better job of updating, but AdAware is kind of slow. We'll get into that later. He does a very good job updating this, and actually this program is very updated almost every other week to deal with the new variants that this service actually comes out with. Two other programs, both we just mentioned, SpyBot Search and Destroy, which is available at tinyurl.com/37tango9fox, and AdAware, which is tinyurl.com/whiskeynovember59er. AdAware is nice. I used to swear by them. However, in my personal opinion, they've really started to slack off lately.
My opinion tends to vacillate between the two of them.
I really
like one day I'll be really enamored with AdAware, the other day I'll prefer SpyBot and go back and forth.
Basically, what you want to do is you want to just run them in tandem. That's my best advice to them. AdAware is a much more commercial offering. Like, for example, they have all these commercial things you can buy and download and set up on your own computer. However, SpyBot is free, completely and totally. It does a...
Free!
Yes, SpyBot does a very good job. It offers, a lot of useful features, and it really... They do a good job of delivering, tools that you really want to use when you're dealing with a spyware infection. They actually include something which I really don't understand, email list of opt-out addresses that you can stop unwanted solicitations from, which I personally wouldn't use in a lifetime, but hey, they include it. If that's your boat, that floats your boat, go right ahead.
It would be I think what I'll do before the next show is I'll download that and I'll create a Gmail account or something. And I will submit this new Gmail account to the email list and see what happens within the space of a week.
I'm actually going to come off here. I'm terribly sorry about this person that I've completely. He has his picture of this wizard, so I honestly, and his name is, I'm going to mispronounce it, Merijn, like Merijn, and it's Merijn Belcombe. And I always constantly refer to it as Merlin, because, hey, it's got the wizard right next to it. He's got the, like, you know, animated ball with lightning bolts coming out of it. So it's Merijn.org, and it's also spywareinfo.com, /Merijn. And he's a student in Netherlands, and he does amazing work. So what also SpyBot does is they actually include a file shredder to securely overwrite unwanted documents that get deleted from your PC. Attleware doesn't do any of this, for the most part. However, Attleware does a very good job of removing spyware and all that kind of stuff that you want it to do. So while Attleware is nice and everything, the problem is that while you know, Attleware actually removes certain things and SpyBot doesn't, while at the same point, spyware removes certain things that Attleware doesn't. So, if you actually install them and run them in tandem and run them at the, you know, like run after another, and they usually catch everything that you really want to do. And personally, when you're actually wanting to do this, when I actually, you know, have a PC that's infected with spyware, the first thing I do actually do is I do hit the uninstall menu, like the add and remove programs in Windows. While, yes, this will almost guaranteed not remove like 90% of the programs, there actually are still a few, very few for that matter, outfits that are, I'm not sure if you want to actually say honest enough, but they either have a conscience or they want to actually provide a hint of legitimacy to their programs that say, oh, you know, we can actually uninstall it, that kind of stuff. However, what I always find...
A hint of legitimacy like a pinch of salt or something.
Yeah, I know. Just a hint of legitimacy, along with a little touch of oregano.
Legitimacy pizza.
Well, no. I could really go for a pizza right now, but either way. What actually always amuses me is like these programs that say... Oh, you know, it shows up in your add and remove programs. You click uninstall, and it says, oh, you want to uninstall this? Okay, here, go to our website and download this program, run it, and it will uninstall the program. And I just look at it as, do you think I'm stupid? It's just insane.
No, my favorite are the ones where you click the uninstall, and then it says, are you sure you really, really want to uninstall this? Yes.
Which way
did did you want to install all these 5 search toolbars for Internet Explorer 2? Come on, yes, you really do want to install them. There, they're installed. Ha, now what you want to uninstall is uninstall. Goodbye, bye.
Seriously, I expect like the wizard to show up. www.yzzrd.com. I am the wizard. Do you want the home invasion game? Anyway, so once I do that, I usually... I go through that just to see what's installed. I hit remove, you know, I try to install what I can. And that usually, you know, eliminates maybe 1, maybe 2 out of 15 million. But, hey, you know, it's at least worth a shot. Basically, next time after that, break out the removal utilities. Attleware, SpyBot. Personally, I used to be a fan of Attleware, but literally SpyBot has taken over that number one position. But running them in tandem, I highly recommend. It's always handy. Attleware does a swell job of certain things. However, SpyBot also does a better good job on a lot of other things. Sometimes when, you know, you run the utilities, there's certain things where I will say the spyware manufacturers, you know, developers, do a very good job of masquerading these programs within the system. They masquerade them as a system process. They, you know, make it so you can't actually terminate the program, so therefore you can't delete it because Windows is stupid like that. They really know how to infest the system very well. When you run into these things, basically the removal tools can't touch them. And before, like back in the day, what you need to do is you need to boot them to a command prompt where nothing else is running. It was just that. And, you know, go in and follow instructions that you find online and delete systems by hand, or that, or, you know, boot them up into a, like, Nopix or another Linux live CD and take them out that way. However, I'm going to...
Now?
Yes, it's wonderful. This wonderful, another Nordic programmer whose name is, they have horrible names. Bart Lagerwigil. Can you... Seriously, how do you pronounce that? Lagerwij. How do you pronounce J at the end of it?
Lagerwij?
Shut up.
Lagerwij? I don't know.
Lagerwij.
Binrev Radio hereby apologizes for all horrible name mispronunciations, and if you do know the correct pronunciations, please email radio@binrev.com or leave us voicemail. Thanks.
Yes, I guess the Netherlands have all the, you know, the smart anti-spyware programmers. But anyway, so this Bart person has developed a program called Bart PE. And it's basically... It's at tinyurl.com/QuebecPopUpKilowattYankee. It's an awesome program. Basically what it is you run this program, and as long as you have a real honest-to-goodness Windows XP CD, or say, for example, something you might find someplace on certain websites, well, we won't get into that.
Look at the CD that just showed up on my desk one afternoon.
It's amazing.
I guess I'll use it.
Yes. Yeah, basically, if you have a real Windows XP CD, what I'm saying is, like, you know, not one of these restore CDs that you're included with your computer, it will allow you to create a bootable Windows live CD, and it's full of all kinds of handy features. Basically, and one of the things he includes with it is Spybot Search and Destroy. Because you're booting from this live CD, it doesn't actually boot from the infested hard drive, so all the utilities that are actually on the hard drive are, you basically, this CD declares open season on all of these nasty bits. You know, basically it comes in, you can run you can have the howitzer firing upon all these little spyware bits and eliminate them completely. So it's very handy. All the automated tools are basically freed up from running dependently on the operating system in our... all the security features and masquerading bits are often eliminated. So this actually saved my, you know, tushy more than a few times. There's some that actually... I'm not actually sure if they call the spyware this, or this is just sort of a, you know, a nickname for it within the anti-spyware communities. It's called VX2. And for those of you who don't know, VX2 is a very, very nasty nerve gas. However, it is nearly impossible to delete when you're running the system, unless you really know what you're doing, and there's like 15 bazillion different mutations of it. So it's very hard to actually capture and delete. They were very impossible to wipe out before, but over Bart, when you boot up on a bootable CD, it greatly simplifies the process. It's not as easy as point and click, but greatly simplifies the process. So, at least I hope that we got a couple of utilities out there that people don't know of. If not, you know, this should be handy for people when, you know, your Aunt Mildred comes and say, "My computer is running very slow, Sonny. Can you come and take a look at it?"
Now you'll be prepared.
Yeah, now you will be prepared. You'll be like a Boy Scout. And
mm-hmm.
You'll be prepared and you'll be able to take it out.
Like a Boy Scout with lots of CDs in your envelope.
Exactly. I do have, like, this little tiny, you know, CD case. And I actually have it in this the CD case of, like, you know, Bart PE and all these utilities that I can install on a computer. And the little box that I have all this stuff in, along with, like, you know, emergency tools and stuff that you probably need to take with you if you're working on a computer, I do call it my trauma kit. Yes,
very
and
nice.
I did find that an amusing term. I actually think it'd be fun to actually, you know, slap the little Red Cross symbol on the side.
That would be
yeah, that would be, that would be pushing it.
Anyway.
Anyway.
So anyway, seeing as we're running
yes,
out of
time, we are. We are
probably
actually,
do our announcements.
You have announcements?
Don't forget, it's kind of short notice, but Layer 1 is in less than 2 weeks. Layer1.info in Pasadena. You can still pre-register before the 8th of April for only $60.
Yep.
And come out and hear some really awesome talks, including my talk. So come out and hear me talk about the wonderful FedEx Kinko's hack. That
woohoo! Get to learn the Strom with all kinds of, you know, wonderful FedEx Kinko hack site things. Also, my announcement is Patrollo 23 wanted me to plug TWAT, which is twatech.org. You should really add it to your podcast. It's very interesting. He wanted to let everyone know that episode 100 is coming up sometime this month. They do a new episode every day, and that he has a bigger phallus than Pony Boy. So, I didn't want to know that. But
well, I'll do them both, and then I'll.
Oh, there you go. I'm sure they'll both enjoy. Actually, I think Patrollo 23 is in L.A. So if you want to go ahead and out. Also, I will be at Linux World tomorrow along with a couple of other people, Koresh and I don't know who else is coming. A couple other people from Boston 2600 and a couple other people that I know of. So I will be there. If you're actually in the area and you want to say, you know, just look for the you know. Fat balding guy. Actually, no, that doesn't narrow it down there. anyway, just, you know, leave me a voicemail on my number, which is on the forums, 914-239-5132, 8888 extension. So just leave me a voicemail. Hey, we can get together, we can go out for lunch, and I don't know, whatever. Oh, Strom, do you have any shouts this evening?
None that I can think of, per se. Shouts to Evan Doorbell.
Yes, for a reason that we know, but no, we're not going to tell anybody.
Yes.
I'll send shouts out to...
Side of the week.
I'll send shouts out to Patrillo 23 for, doing TWAT and getting it up there and, you know, just recruiting it out there. And Droops as well, because Droops had some more than a small hand into it. Side of the week is... The Linux Tech Show.
The Linux Link yes. Tech Show.
Left or right, yeah. I completely mispronounced it. Linux Link Tech Show.
TLLTS.
Yes, it's a fun show. You should listen to it. Email radio@binrev.com. Strom.
Or leave us voicemail.
Oh, yes, sir.
888-9-BINREV.
Anytime between not 9:30 to 11 on Tuesday.
Yes.
Pretty much. So, Strom, would you like to talk about our closing music tonight, which you actually found all by yourself, and I was very proud of you. Got a gold star.
Yes, yes. I was doing some research into the history of vocoders, and I was looking for an example audio file. And if you've seen 2001, you know that Hal sings Daisy Bell at the end of the towards the end of the movie while he's being unplugged. He goes Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer to. So anyway, that was actually inspired by the fact that Arthur C. Clarke was visiting a friend at Bell Labs, and they were doing vocoder research, and the first thing they ever taught a computer to sing was Daisy Bell, and Arthur C. Clarke happened to be sitting in the room while the computer did its first performance of Daisy Bell. So, I found the recording, which was on audio.textfiles.com, actually. And so I figured, hey, it's a kind of cool closing music, unconventional, not what we usually do. So that's our closing music for the evening.
God bless Jason Scott.
Yes. The IBM, I forget the exact
7401, was it?
But it's some gigantic IBM mainframe singing Daisy Bell in 1961.
1961, wow.
So that's our closing music. Yeah.
All right, so that's our closing music tonight, and we're going to once again apologize for the fact that we weren't live this week, and we're going to try to get that fixed by next week. I just need to basically write up a forum post right after this, and we'll see you next week, same hack time.
Same hack channel. Thank you.
It would be a stylish marriage. I passed a shorter carriage, but you look sweet upon the seat of a bicycle built for two.